My name is Ore. I'm a compulsive reader, and I'm from Los Angeles, California, born and raised. Let's go. Can we throw those pictures up and just get that out the way so I can just focus on my sharing later after these pics? Is that possible? All right. There I am in all my glory. 485 pounds is my top weight. I have 4 years and 5 months of recovery this time around. And I'm down around 250 pounds last time I checked. So we can go ahead and clear these out, clear the pictures away. So during my share, I'm going to I've selected usually before I speak like certain, you know, I always go through a process of like what do I need to say, like what God, what is it that I need to say, and you know, just kind of opening up that channel just to be guided and directed, and usually just before I speak, you know, just things come to my mind. And so I'm going to be doing several readings throughout my share from the big book in A 12 and 12. And, you know, my intent is to not come off like a big book thumper. Like, I'm not trying to hit people over the big book, or hit people over the head with the big book. That's not my goal. I've come to believe that it really is divinely inspired thinking. Divinely inspired writing, because it just speaks to it. Just like I connect so much with what that book says and what this spiritual writing is. It describes me to a T, you know. And also like to do a little reading just to kind of let the adrenaline come down, because I get a squeeze of adrenaline just before I speak, and it's just like, you know, I just turn up really high. So I'm just kind of letting that adrenaline just kind of flow through my system. So the first reading is from the doctor's opinion. It says, about 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had but partially recovered from a gastric hemorrhage and seemed to be a case of pathological mental deterioration. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living, one might say, to drink. He frankly admitted and believed that for him there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in his book. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous freak had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. I talked with him for a time, but was not able to bring myself to feel that I had known him before. To me, he was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time has passed with no return to alcohol. And number one, the idea of chronic alcoholism, this disease that's been chronic, meaning happening over time. Like, I've suffered from chronic overeating since I was a kid. You know, looking back on, I don't talk about it too much in my story, like when I share, but when I was a kid, I would go to events with my mom, and we would go to parties. Like my family, we would have these big barbecues when I was a kid, and these block parties. Like, it was like the central place where everybody in the hood would come, because, like, I don't know, my uncles, they were gangsters, like, you know, so they knew everybody, and everybody would come to these big parties we had. And my mom, she was a big partier, and I would see her on the weekend because I wasn't, she wasn't there to raise me, like, she wasn't my primary caregiver. But on the weekends, we would just basically be partying, and I just remember, you know, how excited I would get, not just because of the party, but also just the massive amounts of food. And with my mom, I got to eat everything. You know, during the week, I was on food restriction with my dad. So, you know, this thing has been happening, this overeating life. I got this very early. And like this individual in this story, like, this has been happening over time and been progressing over time. And this idea, like, they said he was a case of pathological mental deterioration as a result of this addiction. Man, you know, I remember this last relapse, when I got getting up to 485 pounds, just the mental suffering that, like, it talks about how the disease warps our thinking. Like, I was paranoid to leave the house because I was so big. I could barely fit in my car. I didn't like when people would pull up to the side of me because they would see how big I was. I didn't want to leave the house. I would pull the blinds down to make sure it was dark. I didn't want to see the sun. I told my sister and my family that I could, like, don't invite me to anything because I'm not going to show up. I couldn't go to work. I had, you know, because of this disease, I've had to take multiple absences, illness leaves from work because I just couldn't function in life. I couldn't wear, you know, only had one pair of pants that I could wear. I couldn't maintain my hygiene. Like, I couldn't wipe myself. I couldn't take showers. I could barely wash dishes because I could only stand up so long before my back started hurting. Like, it talks about turning my will and my life over to the care of God in the third step, because I wasn't able to care for myself. I had lost the ability to care for myself. So this pathological mental deterioration, like, mentally, physically, this disease just broke me down. And not just once, like, you know, I've had multiple stints of abstinence, but this last time was the breaker. That's the one that almost pushed me to killing myself. You know, Bill W. in his story, he talked about almost jumping out of a window. You know, not many people have that experience of being pushed to the absolute edge where you just want to die. And that's what happened to me. Going back to the story, he said he had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living, like one might say, to drink. That was my experience. And that's what I just briefly touched on, like, my whole life was just about the food. I couldn't show up for anything else. I had gotten so big that it got to a point where I couldn't even go to the store, so I had to Postmate everything in. You know? I had to just do drive-throughs. But here's, and this is frankly admitted and believed that for him, there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent. And here's this one little line is something that I point out to people as I go through the book with them. He accepted the plan outlined in this book. And in a later story, he talked about the guy became sold on the ideas of this book. And I think I look back on my experience, that was one thing that's different around, like, this time around and with this brand of recovery, like, that idea of being sold on the ideas in this book. There was, like, intellectually, I understood this. But once I became sold on what this book, what this program was offering me and what it meant, that was the game changer. And let me not come off like it was a choice. Like, Oh, you know, it wasn't something that happened on an intellectual level. It was something that happened on a soul level where I understood that, and there was a clear moment just before I came back where I had a very clear moment where it was just a moment of surrender, like, oh, without a miracle, I'm going to die from this. It was like I was almost seeing myself from a third person point of view, looking down on myself and just where I was in life. Just like just looking up, analyzing myself with almost a clear objective point of view of an organism. Like, this is what I'm going to be if I don't have a miracle. Like, there was no doubt, no, it was just a matter of fact. He says he accepted the plan outlined in this book. And of course, we know what happens after he accepts the plan outlined in his book. That's the hardest part for me, right? That's the hardest part is accepting the plan, accepting that this is my plan of recovery. The hardest part was me, like, you hear people talk about, oh, the fourth step is the hardest, the ninth step is hardest. To me, the first step is the hardest. Like, coming to the full understanding that I am powerless, that without a spiritual plan of recovery, I'm going to die. That's the hardest. Like, I've seen God. I'm a part of they call us the sober eating group, the sober eating men's group out here. And I've seen guys die at our table because they have not fully accepted this way of life, this design for living. They have not fully conceded to their innermost self that this is what they are. That's like that. I think that's for me, that's where it starts. Because once I fully concede that this is me, once I fully accept that I am hopeless without a spiritual plan of recovery, then it's like, okay, well, let me just get in action. Let me do what they say. But I fought this for a long time. I am a hard nut to, I'm very self-willed. You know, and I feel like what I receive, this is a precious gift. I can't, you know, I don't know why 4 years and 4 months ago it clicked in for me. I don't know why. I can't tell you what I did. I can't, I just know that it happened where I stopped fighting this. And I thank God for this relief. I was begging God for a way out. And I didn't even, at that time, it's like I didn't even want to come back to OA. I had years of trying in this program and moments of success and even longer moments of relapse. Like, it wasn't, you know, why did it happen? I don't know why it happened, why this thing clicked in, but I know I was fortunate. I know that I'm fortunate that what I'm experiencing now, not everybody gets to experience. Not everybody gets it back. There are people out there struggling. I get calls from people, Ori, like, would you, like, how did it happen? Like, people calling me crying in tears because they can't get it. And they desperately want it. I was that person too. I feel like I feel like God just reached in and out in a barrel of, and just grabbed me out. It's a precious gift that I have. That now it is up to me to do the work and to continue to maintain the gift. It is a precious gift. I may not get it back. Like, that's something that's different around too. Before, when I would have, it was always a feeling of, okay, I can get it back. I can get back on. I can get back on. You know, I just, oh, I can get back on. I may have not conscious. So there was a part of me that maybe thought still I had control. Oh, I could get back to it. Now, I'm not sure if I go back out again, I get it back. Or if I do, I don't know how many years it's going to take of me gaining all that weight back and all this life that I have now being lost. And I don't know. So it's easier to stay on this side of it. I'm going to read another reading from the AA 12 and 12, step 1, page 24. Why all this insistence that every AA must hit bottom first? The answer is that very few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. And, you know, my bottom was at 485 pounds, and it wasn't just the physical weight. Like I alluded to the mental deterioration and just the dark cloud. It was like every day, it was like a dark cloud over my thinking. Just the level of hopelessness that I had hit. It was mental torture every day. I don't know why it took so much pain, why it took so much of that to hit that bottom. But I know it was necessary, and it talks about it here, and it says, for practicing AA's remaining 11th step means that the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no alcoholic who is still drinking can dream of taking. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Not me. That was not my dream in life. Like, everything that they're going to list here, that wasn't my dream. Like, oh, I want to be rigorously, you know, rigorously honest. I don't want to, like, what? Who? I wasn't taught that. Intolerant, like, tolerant of other people's ideas? Like, no, it's, I'm all right. Who cares about other people's ideas? I don't want to be tolerant of another individual's ideas. Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Ew. No way. Who cares anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? No. The average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect. Unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. Now, see, that's the thing. Like, at 4.5 years, I mean, four years and 5 months, like, underneath it all, that's what drives my behavior. I mean, my actions today. I do these things because I have to, because this is the only, I have to. Like, on those days where I don't want to do meditation, I don't want to be tolerant, I don't want to I'm still human. I'm still self-willed. I'm still undisciplined. I'm still, you know, I still suffer from self-centeredness. So there are days when I don't want to do this. And on those days, it's like that part of me that knows that if I don't do these things, I'm going to go back. That kicks in. And even that's a gift. Like, knowing that if I don't take action, if I don't follow through with this work, I'm going to go back. Because I firmly believe that my mind is always working back towards the food. It's always working back toward the food. And if I don't have that power flowing in me and through me and around me, I'm going to go back. And the only way that I can keep that power flowing, the only way that I can keep the lights on, is if I do this work. I'm going to select another reading here. And this is in Bill's story. And this is like, this reminds me of what precedes a relapse, right? He says, my wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. So Bill W. is out there carrying the message. that's something that is that that's a part of my rehabilitation, and something that's very important in my recovery today is giving it back, looking for every opportunity to give it back and to carry this message. Like, there's nothing, it talks about in the big book, like, there's nothing that ensures my recovery like working with others. Like, it's not even a choice. Like, it's mandatory. I have to do it. Like, if I want to maintain this recovery, I have to do it. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. Now, Bill W. at this point is sober. And what I love about this paragraph is his life isn't perfect. His life is, he's physically having a hard time. He's materially not working. He's having a hard time. He's plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This dude, he's having a really hard time in life. He's newly sober. He says, this sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. When talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. Like, I love that because, you know, in one of my periods of recovery, like, I thought this idea, like, once I got abstinent, oh, they were going to throw parades for me. Oh, I should be praised. Oh, if you're doing so well, like, oh, and life is going to be, you know, rainbows in, flowers and star kiss, and it's going to sparkle and everything's going to be great and I'm going to float in the cloud. No, no, no. Like, that was like a childish view of recovery. Like, all this gives me is the ability to deal with life, right? Like, now I have to show up, and it's not always going to be pretty. You know, excuse my vulgar language here, but sometimes I'm going to have to shovel shit. Like, sometimes I'm going to take a loss. It doesn't mean that I'm exempt from being human. But it's just now I have tools to deal with it all. And here at Bill W., he was pushed to the point where he almost drank. And just like I've been pushed to the point in my life where I've wanted to eat again. And I've wanted to, the darkness seems sexy to me. Like, I've had moments like that. And when all measures have failed for him, working with another person, like, I, you know, to intellectually understand it, but the experience of working with somebody and just talking about recovery and going through the book with somebody or and seeing that light cut on for them or, you know, being a service, just being a service, like, I don't know why that works, but it does. Me getting out of my narrative and stop thinking about Ore and just being of practical use in the world somehow just helps. And it fuels me in a way that nothing else does. You know, early in my previous recoveries, you know, I was going to work the steps, lose the weight, you know, so I could get good, fine, and pretty, get all the girls that I wanted. I wanted to be, you know, I was going to get rich and famous, and, you know, that's what, it was just a springboard for me to do what I want to do in life, basically.
Ore, you have 1 minute left.
Thank you. And God was, you know, something that I say, oh, you know, God, give me what I want. Give me what I want. Can you give me what I want? Like, now, that's not the contract. The contract is, on a daily basis, my life is saved, and now I get to carry out, do the business of that power. Like, what is it that you want me to do? It's no longer about me. I think it is, but it isn't. How do I give back? Like, what kind of energy you want me to put in this world? What message do you want me to carry? What kind of life do you want me to live? And that's the hard, you know, it's like I have to give up. I have to give it all up. It's not just the food. I have to give it all up. And I like this part right here. It says, the joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. And right now, I know a lot of people are feeling pressure and difficulty. But recovery, man, we get to experience freedom and joy. So that will wrap it up right there. And thank you for allowing me to talk.